From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Memphis, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Dallas, Salt Lake City, LA, Denver, Atlanta, Louisville, the list goes on. Because suddenly, those zippy, dockless electric scooters are in dozens of American cities. Now, they're relatively cheap, pretty fast and fun, but most importantly, companies such as Bird, Lime, and Skip say the scooters are modernizing American mobility, solving that intractable last-mile problem. But there are also other problems, namely safety, courtesy, and regulation, especially in cities where residents don't really appreciate suddenly waking to a world where stepping on the sidewalk means playing dodge-em with these new scooters. This hour on Point, e-scooters and the challenges of modernizing the way we move. You can join us. Have e-scooters arrived where you are? Have you tried one? Are they littering your streets or maybe getting you places faster? Do we need a whole new set of rules and regulations if we're going to modernize transportation? But do we also need to revolutionize the culture around how we drive, whether it's two wheels or four? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first in the studio is Callum Borchers. He's a reporter covering the innovation economy for member station WBUR. Callum, welcome to On Point.
Great to be with you.
Okay, so first of all, explain to me, how is it that really, it just seems like over a couple of months, these e-scooters are in so many American cities?
Well, the short answer is that they just haven't asked for permission when dropping in, and things tend to go a lot faster when you just go in without asking for permission. And this has been a deliberate business strategy that we've seen in the tech space over and over again. Going back to Uber and Lyft, a lot of these companies have decided just launch, and the goal is you build as big a user base as you possibly can, scale up, get popular, and then maybe ask for forgiveness later.
Yeah, a lot of these companies, but we should note not all of them. But I think maybe Bird is possibly the best known one right now, and the CEO of Bird once worked for Uber.
That's right, and Lyft as well. And that's sort of a common theme that you see throughout many of these companies. They have worked in other companies. There's another company that has a Lyft alum. There's another company that has someone who founded an electric skateboarding company. So there's a lot of shared history here.
Okay. So for folks who haven't, maybe it's not in their cities yet or they haven't had a chance to try one, explain to me just sort of how it works. What is so revolutionary about the idea of e-scooters?
Sure. So one of the distinguishing features is that they are dockless, which means that you can find them anywhere in a city. You use a mobile app on your phone and it uses a GPS signal to lead you to the location of a scooter. So it's not like, you know, we have Blue Bikes or Hubway here in Boston. A lot of other cities have the same thing, but those are designated drop zones where you know to go and pick them up. One of the convenience factors here is you just are led by your phone to a scooter. You can rent it. They're pretty cheap. As you said off the top, a Bird scooter, for example, costs $1 up front and then just 15 cents a minute after that. So you can go a couple of miles, pay a couple of bucks, and that's really what the appeal is here. And then once you arrive at your destination, by the way, again, there's no docking station, so you just leave
them
it
anywhere.
Wherever. That's right.
Okay. But, I mean, are there any rules around where you can leave them? Is there sort of a courtesy culture here? I was looking at the app and they do say you try to park in certain places, but I mean, we've been seeing stories from across the country. You've been reporting some of them, Callum, where they're ending up in doorways inside people's apartments. I mean, like, what's going on there?
Well, there are rules and then there's enforcement, and those don't always go hand in hand. And in this case, what you have is rules and a lack of enforcement in many cases. So, yes, when you rent a scooter, you'll get sort of the wag of the finger through your mobile app. Hey, you need to be wearing a helmet. You need to have a license. You need to be 18. You need to not ride on the sidewalk. You need to stay on the street. You need to not block sidewalks or handicap ramps, and on the list goes. But it's not like there's someone policing that right in the moment when you drop the scooter off. And so what you're seeing over and over again is cities fielding complaints from their citizens saying, hey, I saw one of these. It was just tipped over and it was blocking the sidewalk. It's blocking a handicapped ramp. People are riding them too fast. They're going through red lights. Just last week, for example, a pedestrian was hit in a crosswalk in Cincinnati and had to go to the emergency room. These are the concerns that we're seeing in cities over and over.
Okay, so that's why some people don't really love the idea of these e-scooters. I mean, we've got some tape here. This is from Vice News. They went out on the streets of San Francisco in the spring to hear reaction to the arrival of electric scooters there. Now, the city of San Francisco did push back. We'll talk about that in a second. But here's a montage of some concerned pedestrians.
I almost got hit three times.
Obviously, they don't belong in sidewalks, but that's where they are.
One wrong turn and I can be on my back. So, oh, no.
They shouldn't be going on the sidewalks and they shouldn't be going so fast.
Get rid of it.
So that about that, when we heard that woman saying they shouldn't be going so fast, we should underscore these are motorized, right? I mean, they might be electric, but they're motorized. How fast do they go?
15 miles an hour is the top speed for many of them, and that is pretty quick. You know, it's below the speed limit, certainly. It's not fast enough in many states to actually require registration by the DMV, but it's a whole lot faster than you'd move on foot, and certainly as fast as you'd go on many bicycles.
Have you ridden one?
I have, although I actually own one, Meghna, so I've not had to rent one. I was an early adopter. When I was living in D.C., I lived a little over a mile from the nearest train station, and I didn't want to show up all sweaty to the station, and I didn't want to pay for parking. So for a couple $100, I bought myself an electric scooter. I could park it for free in the bike rack, and I showed up fresh as a daisy. I thought it was great.
Okay, so you're an owner, but here this we're talking about shareable e-scooters, and in fact, the story you just told about your experience in Washington is what these companies are trying to solve, right? That last mile problem. Like how to get people, most of the travel that we do is within a couple of miles of home. Well, I mean, commuters, my heart goes out to you. That's a different story. But a lot of the travel that we do is in a relatively close proximity. So how is it that these companies are saying this is a way to solve that huge transportation problem in so many American cities?
Right. So they're making the argument that, for example, a bike sharing program may not address all of those needs. I mean, we've had this record-breaking hot summer in many cities. And again, I mean, I say this somewhat lightheartedly, but also somewhat seriously. There are a lot of professionals who don't want to show up to work sweaty because they've been cycling. And this is one of the proposed solutions. You can use something that's like a bike, but you're not exactly exerting yourself when you're on it. And you can show up, you know, in your suit and be just fine. And as far as the last mile solution goes, just generally speaking, although there is public transit in most major cities, there are gaps everywhere.
Lots of gaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, one of the arguments, too, is how do you serve communities that have not necessarily been places where there is access to Ubers or shared bicycles. In Boston, for example, my colleagues in Injor and Wameka was recently reporting on how the shared bicycle system is just now reaching neighborhoods in the city that have not been covered in the past, places like Roxbury and Roslindale, where there has not been service. And so this is part of the pitch, too, because we're dockless, we can be everywhere.
Okay. It'll be left to see if that indeed actually happens, right? But we're going to talk to the CEO of one of these companies in just a minute. But Callum, I do want to ask you one important question, because really what I want to look at this hour is sort of what happens when a transportation revolution meets, you know, current regulations, right? And the tension there, and how if it's possible to resolve that tension at all. Because I'm seeing, you know, Santa Monica, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Denver, Dallas, Boston. I mean, lots of cities have very aggressively pushed back against these e-scooters. I mean, what are some of their concerns and complaints?
Well, part of the problem is a lot of the cities don't have existing laws that clearly address this new mode of transportation. And this is a problem we see in tech all over the time, right? Because, you know, laws are written and then something innovative comes along and it's like, where does this apply? Like in Cambridge, for example, there's nothing on the books about electric scooters. So the city has said, well, you're basically a street vendor because you're displaying your wares on the public way and you're charging money for it. So you would need to get a street vendor license because there is no such thing as a scooter license. But we've seen other cities like Santa Monica and San Francisco very quickly move to adopt specific scooter sharing permits. And they are working on those kinds of structures. And it's becoming a very competitive process. In San Francisco, for example, they're planning to pilot a permit system for 4 or 5, I believe, companies. They have 11 applicants. And what I find really telling, Meghna, is that among the applicants already are Uber and Lyft. They don't have electric scooter sharing systems yet, but they are anticipating that they will, and they want to make sure they get in on a big market.
Interesting. Well, in Santa Monica, I note that they did pass an emergency ordinance there this year, I think, that gave the city the ability to impound scooters that were improperly parked. And Bird also agreed to pay a $300,000 fine to the city of Santa Monica. They didn't contest that for just sort of launching without the city's approval. Well, Callum Borchers, stand by here for just a second, because I'm delighted to welcome into the show Sanjay Dastur. He is CEO and co-founder of Skip Scooters. He also Skip Scooters and the electronic skateboard and longboard company Boosted Boards. Now, Callum, you mentioned a second ago that San Francisco is launching this pilot program for permits for e-scooters, and Skip Scooters is one of a dozen companies applying for those permits. And Sanjay Dastur joins us from San Francisco. Welcome to On Point.
Great to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you. I mean, we've just got a couple minutes here before our first break. But first of all, like, give me your pitch here. Why is it that you think that e-scooters are really an important part of a transportation revolution that we need here in the United States?
Well, as you and Callum both mentioned, there is a gap in our transportation infrastructure, right? You've got cars and ride-sharing services filling one of the needs that we have with transportation, but short trips, whether they're, you know, a half mile to a mile and a half to 2 miles that you might want to take in a city, especially a dense environment like a downtown area, or connecting to something like public transit, those trips are not always effectively served with cars. They're sometimes are not effectively served with bicycles. In San Francisco, for example, we don't have the heat that you might have in some cities, but you have the hills. And so we see a lot of the usage of things like shared bicycles may not work as well in hilly environments and hilly neighborhoods. So, you know, scooters are one possibility, one option that complements what we already have and serves this gap and can do it very effectively.
So we just got about a minute here before the break. What's your launch strategy when you're entering a new city with your e-scooters?
Yeah, so we actually pioneered the idea of working with the cities to create a permit before we went in. So even though we're based in San Francisco, our whole team, we launched in Washington, D.C. by crafting the first legal permit system in the United States for electric scooter sharing. So we piggybacked onto the bike share pilot that they were already doing. We worked with the city to craft the permit. We were the first ones to share data with the city, and we went in with their help. So the approach of working with cities is the first step in our launch playbook.
All right. Well, we're going to talk a lot more about this when we come back from the break. We are talking about e-scooters and whether or not they represent a transportation and mobility revolution in America and what happens when that revolution pushes up against existing regulations. Regulations, by the way, that are there for a reason. I want to hear from you. Have you tried an e-scooter? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Are they littering the sidewalks of the streets of your city? How do we revolutionize our transportation infrastructure and keep everyone safe and happy? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about e-scooters, those shareable electric dockless scooters that are popping up in cities all over the country. Memphis, Milwaukee, Dallas, Salt Lake City, Denver, Atlanta, San Francisco, the list does go on. And we're talking about whether or not it represents a transportation revolution and what to do when that revolution may bump up against important regulations as well. We're talking today with Callum Borchers. He's a reporter covering the innovation economy for WBUR. Also, Sanjay Dastur joins us from San Francisco. He's CEO and co-founder of the e-scooter company Skip Scooters. We've already got a lot of comments coming in on Twitter here. Jay Kimmel says, at a recent conference in Austin, I fully used scooters around town. They were incredibly helpful. I fully encourage their use. If they're being messy, well, how does one regulate being polite? And on our website, commenter DXO says, if cities made themselves more bike and scooter friendly, the sidewalk thing wouldn't be an issue. Car-centric thinking is the obstacle. Well, there are different perspectives about this because the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts has had its own conflict with some e-scooter companies, namely Bird, and they ordered Bird scooters off the street earlier this month. And here's some tape of Cambridge Mayor Mark McGovern, who says he's not opposed to the idea of e-scooters, but he wants to see precautions first. And here's what he said recently with to Callum Borchers.
What's going to happen when they hit a senior citizen? And again, this isn't to say they shouldn't be allowed to operate here. It just has to be done thoughtfully, and there's a process to it. And you don't get to just, you know, and I'll use the pun, flip us the bird, you know, and come into the city and think that we're just supposed to, you know, roll over and thank you.
Callum, since you're here right now, we're going to talk to another city official who has some equal concerns, but has it been worked out in Cambridge? Is there a good partnership now, or is there still some tensions there?
No, the tension is still very much there. For a while, we had the standoff where Cambridge had said, you can't be here, and Bird said, we don't care, we're still operating. They were impounding some scooters and kind of playing this game back and forth. More recently, Bird has pulled out of Cambridge in what they call a good faith effort. They're going to work on finding some framework in which they could operate legally in Cambridge and around the Boston area. But the big problem, Meghna, is that there's this ongoing review at the state level where the Massachusetts Transportation Department is considering whether the scooters are legal in the entire state, because there is a law on the books that says electric scooters have to have turn signals and brake lights. And Bird scooters don't have either. Most of these don't. I checked in with the Transportation Department this morning. They said there's nothing to report as far as their review goes. But that is sort of the big elephant in the background right now in Mass.
Are there similar state reviews going on elsewhere, or do we know?
Well, in New York, for example, which is, by the way, the sort of big omission on the map here, you don't have these scooters in New York City. And that's because there is a very explicit provision in their registry of motor vehicles that says that these kinds of motorized scooters are illegal on any street or sidewalk. And so you don't have them right there. Where there's sort of gray areas, though, is where they're running into the sort of pushback from cities.
Sanjay Dastur, let me just quickly ask you, is that part of the problem here, part of the challenge that, you know, given the way regulation works in the United States, you have very hyper-local regulations at the city and town level, state and federal, that it will always be somewhat ad hoc whenever you're trying to introduce a new kind of transportation technology?
Absolutely. I mean, that's been the history of how cars were introduced into the United States. It's the history of even bicycles. There was no law around bicycles when they were first introduced. It's true for any transportation innovation. I think there's two categories of regulation that apply here. The first one is, are these scooters legal to use on the road? And a lot of the regulations for scooters were designed around gas-powered scooters that might have been built in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And those laws are being applied now to electric scooters, which may be much quieter, might be much safer, have brakes, be lighter weight. And then the second set of regulations is around sidewalk parking and usage and, you know, can you leave these in certain places? Are they in someone else's way? And so you have to think about both sets when you're thinking about how this works in a city today.
Yeah. Well, let me bring into the conversation another voice here. Adam Stevens joins us. He joins us from Milwaukee. He's the deputy city attorney for Milwaukee. And the city is part of a federal lawsuit against Bird Rides over Bird's refusal to remove scooters from streets and to cease their rental business. Adam Stevens, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
It's really great to have you. And before we go any further, I just want folks to know that we did reach out to Bird to see if they would join us, and they declined our invitation. So, Adam Stevens, if you could just share with us, what are the concerns that Milwaukee has about these e-scooters?
Well, as you've already mentioned in the show, you know, a variety of states and a variety of municipalities have a variety of different kinds of laws involving transportation and motor vehicles. In Wisconsin, like many other states, the city actually enforces state traffic law. So the city doesn't have the option to unilaterally authorize the use of the Bird motor scooters when they rolled out here in June 27th of this year. So we asked Bird to refrain from distributing their motor vehicles because the state law prohibited them, and they declined to do so. So we've instructed them to seek a change in state law, and frankly, I think our policymakers generally support these kinds of alternative transportation methods. It just needs to be done in a proper context.
So tell me a little bit more. I mean, what did Bird say when it refused to comply with what Milwaukee was asking?
Well, their position is the position they've taken in other places, was that because it wasn't expressly prohibited, it was therefore allowed. And frankly, I thought that was a little bit of a facetious argument, because the state of Wisconsin defines motor vehicles in a very general way, which clearly a motorized scooter would fit under the definition of a motor vehicle. We had done, our office, a city attorney's office, had done a legal memorandum back in 2004 when a lot of the Razor scooters were introduced, the children's toys. They were electric motorized scooters, as did the State Department of Transportation. And both of those opinions said you know, more than 10 years ago, that these were motorized vehicles that, frankly, under Wisconsin law at the time and currently, could only be used on public, or excuse me, on private property.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think you hit on something there, which is at the core of the bind that cities might find themselves in, right? That Byrd is arguing that if it's not expressly prohibited, that it's allowed. But how can you expressly prohibit technologies that haven't yet been invented? That, you know, if transportation is going to move forward, we don't know exactly what direction it's going to go in, to use a pun. But so, like, how does, you know, how can you craft regulation that anticipates the future?
Well, you can define things in a general way. And that's why I think it was an incorrect and unreasonable interpretation to say that simply that if they're not specifically banned, that somehow they're allowed. Because to your point, I mean, we could have the invention of hover cycles in a couple of years, and you can't just argue that you could just start riding around on new technology throughout the public streets. Because frankly, while some folks view it as just hyper-technical red tape that the government is engaging in, what the real debate is in the legislative process is deciding who's going to use shared public space and how that shared public space is going to get used.
Yeah. So let me just get Sanjay Dastoor's response to that. I mean, what is your take on who's going to use public space and how it's going to be used?
Well, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you know, part of what all of these systems have to do is serve not just the people who use them, but the people who don't use them. And whether that's pedestrians, whether that's other, you know, cyclists in the bike lane, you know, I've been working on last mile transportation for almost a decade now. And one of the things we always focused on was how our users and our riders were interacting with everyone else in the environment. I think it's really important that conversation happen and that you get buy-in from the entire community, including city regulators, including pedestrian advocacy groups. Otherwise, the system is just serving one segment and it's not going to work.
Mm. I mean, Adam Stevens... here's one thing that I kind of struggle with these business models, because I'm personally a believer that American transportation does need to be modernized for the good of the country. But, you know, to your question about public spaces, here we have private companies. These are private companies that are using public spaces to do their business. And I can't think of any other private company that's allowed to do so without some sort of permitting process, right? And so, I mean, that is one of the big differences here. Is it just that we're just going to need to very rapidly create permits for these companies, or what? Or is there just this presumption that these private companies have, you know, can do business in public spaces?
Well, you're absolutely right. And I mean, and I've got a couple of responses to that. Number one, we've, in our lawsuits, we did develop an ordinance during the pendency of the case. So the case is ongoing in federal district court. But we did pass an ordinance that allows our Department of Public Works to impound these scooters when they're found in public ways, which includes sidewalks, roadways, and everything else. Byrd has since removed the scooters from Milwaukee in mid-August.
Can I just jump in here, though? But the whole model for these scooters relies on them being available in public places, though.
That's exactly right. And that's why the city is so innately interested in this, because as your other guest has mentioned, it's a shared public space. The complaints that the city receives, both my office, the police department, DPW receives, we get complaints from senior citizens, we got complaints from visually impaired individuals because their dogs didn't understand what they were silent, you know, and they couldn't deal with them. We got complaints from hotel managers because people were riding them through hotel, inside their hotels. And so this is not to say that you don't have this as an option, but part of, again, what the legislative process discusses is where are these things appropriate? Because frankly, when they're dropped off at the last minute, people kind of ride them in a way that that a child would ride it through the street. They're not necessarily obeying traffic laws. They're kind of just, you know, freewheeling it, frankly. And we didn't have the opportunity in Milwaukee, as I guess most other municipalities didn't have the opportunity to actually have a public debate about it before they were rolled out.
Yeah. I mean, Callum Borchers, have any cities had the opportunity to have a real public debate before the rollout happened? I mean, at the top of the show, we talked about how a lot of these just showed up.
Right. And then crafting what the framework would be after the fact. And it sort of is this rolling decision-making process. I think Santa Monica, for example, is a really interesting case study. You mentioned earlier that Byrd had paid a $300,000 fine to get back on the streets in Santa Monica. But that was really just kind of a stopgap measure. So in the meantime, while they've been operating, Santa Monica Monica has sort of gotten wise to the fact that this is really popular and it's possibly a revenue stream for the city too. So their city council in Santa Monica plans to launch a pilot program beginning in the middle of September, and that would require companies to pay an annual licensing fee of $20,000 and then also a fee of $130 per scooter that they put on the streets. And so what I think is interesting and is worth asking, and perhaps our friend from Milwaukee can answer, is where's that balance between sort of the bottom line consideration of a city and also the safety? Like if you say that you're worried about the safety of your citizens and you shouldn't be here, oh, but we'll let you be here if you pay a large sum of money to operate on our streets, you know, is the safety argument fully genuine?
Adam Stevens?
Well, that's a great example, and I think part of the issue too is that in our ordinance we have asked we've instructed our lobbying department to lobby state legislature to authorize these things, but we wanted to the ability to start a pilot program because frankly we don't have any experience doing it, so we need to have that pilot program before we decide what kind of regulations are necessary here, because frankly Milwaukee is different than Santa Monica. I mean, we have a very aggressive winter condition, so we have lots more potholes than you would have in warmer climes because of the freeze-thaw issue. But having said that, part of the issue of charging a fee is frankly the normal policing response, meaning it's going to be the Department of Public Works that's going to have to deal with the piles of the scooters when they're not properly parked well. It's going to be the police department that's going to have to respond to complaints of collisions and accidents. We did have one here where the fire department was summoned. So, and that was our first bird rider that was cited for operating a motor vehicle that wasn't registered, which is the legal problem that they have here. So these fees should be tied to whatever the municipal service is going to be. But again, the legislative process, for example, when Segway was rolled out in 2001, the state of Wisconsin, like most other states, created statutes that permitted them. And they kind of created them in a hybrid fashion, meaning they were allowed partly to ride on the sidewalks and also use the bike lanes, which is unusual. Whether or not motorized scooters will fall into that same consideration is yet to be seen, but it's the use of discretion to decide who gets to use the public space.
Well, Adam Stevens is deputy city attorney for the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee is part of a federal lawsuit against Bird over that company's refusal to remove scooters from the streets and cease their rental business. Adam Stevens, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, we were talking about e-scooters and whether or not they represent a transportation revolution and how maybe regulation can catch up with that revolution. Lots of people want to have their say. So let's turn to Jonah, who's calling from Washington, D.C. You're on the air, Jonah.
Hi. I feel like scooters are great on one hand. I mean, I am a scooter charger, and it's a great way to make some extra money. And it's great communities such as through Facebook pages among other chargers and riders. But on the other hand, the companies themselves are completely irresponsible, and the rollout showed no accountability except for maybe get scooters, because they are the only one that actually tried to respect the law, opposed to Bird and Lime, which just threw them on the streets. And I mean, they're a great way to get around, but at the same time, they are horribly mistreated. No one sets them upright. No one parks them correctly. They're always blocking entrances, blocking handicap entrances in places that handicapped people need to be able to get by, and they're just not good. There's even a Facebook page called Bird Graveyard, Instagram, which is just videos of people destroying scooters, setting them on fire, throwing them off bridges, anything you can imagine.
Wow.
I mean, they're a public nuisance.
Well, Jonah, thank you so much for your call. Sanjay Dastur, let me turn back to you here. You're CEO of Skip Scooters. I mean, Jonah had a lot to say about Bird and Lime there, but more broadly, for all the companies, can't there be more done for the companies themselves to encourage sort of civil scooter riding practices? Is it the culture around this? We have to develop a new transportation culture. Isn't that part of the challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's on the companies, including our own, to help educate riders about where to ride and where not to ride, where to park and where not to park. I mean, you're going to have bad actors in anything. I mean, we have, drivers who are not courteous. We have pedestrians who are not courteous, cyclists, right? I mean, any form of transportation is going to have its good players and bad players. I think scooters are no exception. But it is on the companies, especially as this rolls out, to help educate, whether that's with group events, whether that's with reminders in the app, or whether that's with technology. For example, our scooters know when they're tipped over, and our team can go out and put them back up. There's a bunch of different ways to solve those problems. But yeah, it's on everyone to help find the solution that works here.
How fast can that happen, Callum? Go ahead.
Well, I'm curious to hear from Sanjay. We heard our caller Jonah there sort of praising Skip for being one of the few companies that's trying to play by the rules. And I'm curious, Sanjay, whether you feel disadvantaged by that in some way, you know, that other companies that have not decided to play by the rules and have just dropped in unannounced with no regard for permits are getting more and more adoption and larger and larger market share. Do you feel like you're falling behind by trying to do things the right way?
Yeah, it's actually quite the opposite, because if you look at a city like Washington, D.C., we're allowed the same number of scooters as others, and we're able to gain equal market share and serve our community differently. And that's true for all the cities that are creating these permit processes.
All right. Well, we were talking about e-scooters, and they're popping up in cities all over the country and actually also internationally as well. And what happens when new ways of moving around meet maybe older regulations? Again, those regulations, though, being there for a really important reason. How do we modernize both? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about e-scooters and whether you love them or you hate them, if they represent a transportation revolution to get us across that last mile where we do so much travel, but maybe cars or public transportation doesn't work anymore for how we live today. Lots of comments coming in on the website here. Kathy says the problem is tech companies simply ignoring existing laws and just doing stuff under the ludicrous claim that existing laws don't apply. After all, Kathy says, Uber isn't a cab service, it's just people sharing a ride. BS, she says. And David Andrade says, I have almost been hit by a number of these scooters while being the only person on the sidewalk. They're going 2 to 3 times faster than my walking pace. David says he can recount at least 10 of these incidents in Salt Lake City alone. Let's turn to Anne, who's calling from Ames, Iowa. You're on the air, Anne.
Hi, Magna.
What do you think about scooters?
I'm worried about the speed on the sidewalk. In front of my house in Ames is a 4-lane street separated from the sidewalk by medians. The speed limit is 30 miles an hour. This sidewalk is about 1.5 people wide, and scooters can go 15 miles an hour. That just seems bizarre.
Yeah, so you're concerned about it. Anne, thank you so much for your call. Sanjay Dastoor, since you're the CEO of one of these companies of Skip Scooters, what's your response to Anne?
I think she's right. I mean, you shouldn't be going 15 miles an hour on a sidewalk anywhere. I think really it's a sign about our bike lane infrastructure that a lot of folks use the sidewalk. In areas where there is strong bike lane infrastructure, we've seen our riders stick to the bike lane, and actually 15 miles an hour is quite reasonable there. I wouldn't want a cyclist going down the sidewalk at 15 either. I think part of this solution is to invest in bike lane infrastructure like we're doing, and part of it is rider education to say, hey, that's not okay.
You know, I hear that all the time from transportation thinkers as well. But, you know, there's a chicken and egg problem here. It will take billions and billions of dollars and many years for American cities to have that kind of infrastructure. What are you going to do in the interim?
Well, I would actually push back on that. I mean, it takes a lot of time and money to build a car lane as well, or to build a new highway. I mean, bike lane infrastructure, by contrast, can be built very inexpensively per mile. And the way it can be done, I think, starts with support from not just the cyclists and cyclist advocacy groups that have been working on this problem for many years, but also riders of scooters and pedestrians and callers. Like the one that we just had, who support bike lane infrastructure. I think that's one of the most powerful things happening about this movement. It's actually going to create better infrastructure for everybody.
Point taken, but I still think that the dollar cost is very high for changing infrastructure in cities. But the whole point of these e-scooters or any sort of mobility revolution is that they're now. They are there now. So that's what I'm wondering. We're talking about differing timescales here.
Sure. I mean, I think bike lane infrastructure is improving rapidly. If you look at most cities, the number of miles of bike lane, even without the scooter kind of changes that are happening, are getting built very quickly now. So I'm hopeful that this will happen fast. And, part of the problem as well, though, is, hey, can you educate riders on not being on the sidewalk and not, you know, being in the way of pedestrians and going too fast?
Well, I want to bring another voice here into the conversation. Susan Shaheen joins us from Berkeley, California. She's a professor and co-director of the Transportation Sustainability Research Center at the University of California, Berkeley. Susan Shaheen, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
You know, I'm really glad to have you in this conversation because I think actually the point that we're at is we're looking at the big picture of really the future of transportation in so many American cities. Are these new mobility devices, if I can call them that, are they the thing that might be able to get us to a critical mass where we can have the infrastructure changes that we were just talking about that maybe a lot of cities need?
The streets of our cities are definitely being disrupted, and this has been the case for about 20 years. And what we're starting to see is the filling out of this ecosystem, the ecosystem between essentially that private car that we've all come to rely upon and the public transportation system. So when we add all of these new modes to the transportation space, oftentimes we find that the rights of way are not accommodating for all of them because, again, we've ended up with very much a domination of one or two modes for many, many decades.
Okay. And so then where do we go from here then? I mean, I think what's interesting to me is we're sort of in that rough middle patch where we still have those dominant modes, but we have these new modes as well that are, we don't have regulations to match them.
Right. And I think cities are getting much more savvy about how to address the disruption. And I know you've been talking about a lot of that this morning or throughout the day. But also, what I think is really important to take into consideration is that a lot of these modes that we're talking about today are part of active transportation, and they do need infrastructure to support them, so bikes, scooters. And what we've seen with bike sharing, and I don't know how much you've spoken about that today, is this idea that people really can get around and go from point A to point B probably more cost effectively and also get some exercise and get from point A to point B in a congested city more rapidly if they share a bike. And I think the idea of the shared scooter is similar. Hmm. And what we've seen with bike sharing since about 2010 is that the infrastructure has grown and grown quite rapidly to accompany it.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call here. Wendy is calling from New Orleans. You're on the air, Wendy.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to mention, I hear people talking about infrastructure and all of that. In New Orleans, we have segways on the streets, particularly the French Quarter. We have electric cars. They can be either two-seaters or six-seaters. We have buggy riding. We have blue bikes that are now put up around the city where people can rent them at different stations.
So a lot of different ways to get around in New Orleans.
Yeah. And the French Quarter in particular is a very difficult place to get around. There's car traffic. There's people traffic. There is an infrastructure that is constantly being ripped up, repaired, ripped up. It's a constant thing.
So are these scooters are the scooters a good addition then?
I think it's a silly addition. I think we are already completely overcrowded with ways to get around, particularly in the French Quarter. Also, people that drink here. We have an open carry thing here, allows people to drink on the street in cups. And we've got people riding around in scooters. The first day I saw the electric scooters in the Quarter, someone drove off with his kid in the front of the scooter, steering the scooter.
Which they are not supposed to do. Wendy, thank you so much for your call. Sorry that your phone line was a little tough to hear there, but I appreciate your call. On the other hand, we've got a comment on Twitter from someone who calls themselves 504 Love, who says, in New Orleans, it amazes me how hysterical a few vocal people are about these things. They were against the blue bikes, and those have worked out just fine. Some people just can't stand change of any kind. Callum Borchers, what do you think?
Well, I think that what we're seeing here is this sort of acknowledgement on the business side that there is perhaps a lot of competition for limited space on our public ways. And I think what you see is some of these companies perhaps diversifying their portfolios and maybe hedging their bets. Uber, for example, is a large investor in Lime, which is one of the prominent electric scooter and electric bike companies. We've also seen Lyft recently acquire the company that manages the Blue Bikes rental system in Boston and other cities. And so what you see is this attempt at what I would say is sort of a vertical integration in the shared ride space. So a company saying, we want a piece of the action, whether it's cars, bikes, electric bikes, scooters, maybe they'll all work out, maybe they won't, but we're kind of diversifying our bets.
Mm. Daniel's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Daniel.
Hi, Magna. I just wanted to say, first of all, that, you know, obviously, like, companies should follow the rules, you know, and I can't believe I'm defending a startup here, but I do want to note that when I signed up for Bird, I had to comply with they had to scan my license, which is a requirement for mopeds in MA, which is kind of, I mean, you know, one way that you could categorize these things. I had to scan my license. I had to take a picture every single time I parked the scooter to make sure that it wasn't blocking the pathway. And, you know, we're hearing a lot of people calling in, and we're always going to hear about the people who, you know, obviously I've seen pictures of people blocking sidewalks and things online and, you know, people behaving badly with them. But in Cambridge, in the short time that I was using them, I didn't see anyone violating the rules. I even went out of my way to, you know, park it in somewhere where there was a bike rack, which the app suggests you do. And I think that is the real solution here, is we have a car-centric society where we're wringing our hands about safety, but, you know, meanwhile we have cars that kill tens of thousands of people in America a year, poison our lungs with various diseases. And then we have, you know, people are, again, I can't believe I'm defending a startup here, but you know, look at what Volkswagen did with their emissions scandal. So, you know, I really think we should wring our hands in proportion to the possible danger that scooters cause. And I really think that they are dwarfed by the dangers that we accept for cars.
Daniel, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Taylor, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. You're on the air, Taylor. Oh, looks like Taylor gave up on us. That's too bad, Taylor. I was going to go right to you. Susan Shaheed, I mean, you've heard both the defenders and people who are still concerned about e-scooters, especially we heard from New Orleans, where the caller was saying they have so many different modes of transportation on city streets that aren't equipped for them, that she's fed up.
Yes, yes. And we hear this all the time, right? But We do need to create a more healthy ecosystem for people to get around. And active transportation can be really great for cities. I think that the question is how do we ensure that these companies are playing by the rules, getting the permits, helping monitor their systems, and ensuring that people are being good actors. And that's how we ensure that we get to a more sustainable transportation system along with that supportive infrastructure.
Well, so to that point, I want to play a bit of tape here because you just asked, how do we ensure that the companies are doing their part to be sure that users do comply with regulations, et cetera? In San Francisco, following the unannounced arrival of Bird and Lime bike scooters, the city there really pushed back. San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin called for regulation of the companies and the scooters at an April 16th city committee meeting. And he called the company's tactics reckless.
Many of these companies continue to build their corporate empires off of a basic premise: making massive profit always trumps protecting the public, and innovation is only possible by cutting corners.
Susan Shaheen, respond to that, because I think this is part of the public perception here, that these Silicon Valley companies, they're making their money by, you know, to quote Mark Zuckerberg, moving fast and breaking things, and they have no incentive to actually work perhaps as closely as Skip Scooters is with the cities that they're launching in.
Right, and San Francisco has really had its fair share of a lot of disruption, and I think what you're hearing in Peskin's voice is that frustration of there just being so much innovation and, in some cases, disruption and disrespect for the public rights of way and the public good. And so really where we have to get back to is a much more balanced conversation between the public sector and private sector about where we want to go and how we can get there together.
Yeah. Sanjay Dastoor, this is your world, right? You're one of these CEOs, and I hear you saying that Skip Scooters may be taking a different tack than Bird or Lime and the like, but I mean, have you talked to your fellow CEOs there? Is there any appetite to work more closely? Perhaps it would be to the advantage of these companies. I mean, we've seen with Airbnb in places where they've gotten pushback, they want to help shape the new regulation. So is that a possibility?
Yeah. The ability of this industry as a whole to help set an example here. I mean, we're at the beginning of this, right? This whole conversation wasn't even happening a year ago, and now we're in so many cities. Our approach has been to set the example, to work with Washington, D.C., to work with Portland, to work with cities like San Francisco, where we're applying for a permit, and say, look, the first step in this is to actually have that conversation, have that dialogue, and to do this the right way. And we think that's the right long-term approach for this whole industry.
One more quick question here we've got from actually lots of listeners coming in on email. What about e-scooters and required helmets? Sanjay, we don't see that many people wearing those helmets. That's a big problem, isn't it? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, it's a problem for any shared system. If you look at bike share, you know, City Bike in New York and similar types of systems, Go Bike in San Francisco, most riders are not wearing helmets because most don't bring them along. So we see kind of tourists tend not to use them as much. We see regular commuters tend to use them more. We provide free helmets that you can order through our website or through our app, and those will go to you and you can bring them with you. It's tough to have shared helmets, you know, on the vehicle because no one really wants to be using a shared helmet, you know, especially on a hot, sweaty day. So I don't know if there's a perfect solution, but, you know, supporting helmet usage and creating opportunities for people to use helmets more, I mean, that's something we're strongly supporting.
I'm seeing here that Bird has actually sent out some 20,000 helmets to people who've requested them, just asking them to pay for shipping. But you know, everyone, you ought to wear a helmet if you value your heads. The mom in me can't help it. I just can't help it. I'm not going to tell anyone how to live their lives. But Callum Borchers, we just got a minute here left to go. One thing we haven't touched on is a lot of investors are really seeing the future in these companies, right? I mean, Sanjay, how much is your company valued at quickly right now?
I can't share the valuation, but there has been a lot of investor interest. I think transportation is something that all of us spend a lot of money on. And so if there's a new solution that people are ready to adopt and that is going to become part of the fabric of our infrastructure, investors are interested in funding that.
Well, that sounds like the optimistic talk of someone who wants more VC funding, but not to be dismissive, but Callum, I'm seeing that Bird is valued at something like $2 billion already. Is that even a real... How do they come by that valuation? Is that realistic?
Well, you just look at the venture capital that they have raised. If you just look at Bird, Lime, Spin, and Skip, those big four players combined have raised $921 million of venture capital. That doesn't tell you exactly what the valuations of those companies are, but it is multiples of that. And so it just shows how optimistic investors are that this is the future of transit.
Well, Callum Borchers, reporter covering the innovation economy for member station WBUR, thank you so very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Sanjay Dastoor, CEO and co-founder of the e-scooter company Skip Scooters, joining us from San Francisco. Sanjay, thank you so much. And I hear that San Francisco might be issuing those permits any day now. Is that right?
We're hopeful that it'll be soon.
All
thanks,
right.
Magna.
And Susan Shaheen, professor and co-director of the Transportation Sustainability Research Center at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And listeners, keep those comments coming about what you think the future of transportation should be at onpointradio.org. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.